You know, it's incredible that Margot Hammond has joined us in the studio because she is fresh off the debut of her play, I Am a Mystery, that got sold out. Unbelievable. Margot, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here at your fundraiser. I can't believe you've been going for how many hours have you been going?
Seven
hours. That's awesome.
Joe Berdow in studio, the Energizer Bunny, and also the Velvet Voice. You know, Margot, I want to talk a little bit about books and things like that. But before that, I know that you grew up in the Great North in the cold and snow. Did you make snow angels?
We did. We made snow angels.
We
always had snow for Christmas back then. And, of course, when you're little, I swear to God that it was more snow. But it might just be because we were little and the snowbanks looked bigger. But I think it actually snowed more then.
How many sisters?
I had three sisters. We were four girls in the family. My poor father had to put up with that. And we had Christmas was a very nice time. It was I was not as a big fan of Thanksgiving as I was Christmas when I was a kid.
Tell us about your traditions. Was there baking? Was there certain food? What would
there
you do?
There was always lots and lots of food. My grandmother, Swedish grandmother, lived with us, and she was a baker. And we called her Nana, and we would always yell, Nana made rolls. And so we had rolls that we called Nana made rolls. I mean, that's what they were called as we grew up. And my mother knocked herself out every year. And I was listening to the TV this morning, a talk show, and someone said they had 35 people at their house. And I thought, yeah, we probably had more than that. I mean, 35 people, that's just awesome.
So I did a little research about the Swedish traditions, and I wanted to ask you about this. It says that there was Swedish legends about Christmas elves riding the Yule goat door-to-door to deliver presents similar to Santa Claus. And in 1966, the town of Gävle constructed an epic version of the Yule goat of wood, rope, and straw to promote local tourism. To this day, it happens the first Sunday of every year. It's the size of a three-story house.
Wow.
I never knew that, but I knew about the lights, the St. Lucie.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about it. Do you remember that?
Well, that's interesting because my grandmother, you know, when she came over, she came over with her sisters she came over when she was 19.
Oh, wow.
And so they were very Americanized. But we would go to the Swedish club. There was a Swedish club in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where I grew up. And every year I was tasked with reciting The Night Before Christmas. And so I had to memorize that. So every single year I had to go and recite The Night Before Christmas.
Well, you know, you missed it today. Eugenie Bondurant and Rocio Escobar from Station 12 Studio were in, and we did a little Scrooge and Tiny Tim and Cratchit, and then The Night Before Christmas, which is just, I would love for, next year you're coming to studio and reading this.
I haven't read it since I was like 12, maybe, but that, yes, I'd be glad to.
Well,
but anyway, so we had always had a big party at the Swedish Club. And then I found out about Santa Lucia, which was never celebrated by my family. And so my younger sister, she's 5 years younger than I am. And I said, we've got to celebrate. This is a beautiful holiday, and it's our tradition. So we forced it on our family then.
Well, tell us about that tradition.
Well,
what does it look
isn't.
Like?
The original idea was you were supposed to wear candles around your head. Now, we never did that because we thought it was a little too dangerous. But the best part of it is that you gave presents.
Let's do that here in studio.
Presents, but they were supposed to be little presents, not the sort of Christmas presents you think of. And they were supposed to be either kindness or little things that you could think of. And anyway, my sister's name was Maureen, but we called her Reenie, or we call her Reenie. She's still with us. And in fact, we named her. My sisters got together and when she was born, and my parents said, what should we call her? And we came up with Reenie. So that's her nickname. And she and I forced the Santa Lucia celebration on them. And still to this day, you know, I think about that and I think, well, you know, traditions are nice but I think at a certain point, you know, when you're getting older, at least I'm feeling this way, is that holidays are kind of a burden. And so these last few years, I have enjoyed more simple Christmases.
So what do you do now for Christmas? Have you decorated the studio?
No, it's interesting. About 2 years ago, I gave up on decorations. I said, this is it. I'm done. And I gave them all away. And I said, no, I think I really want it to be a more simple kind of celebration. And we, for the last, I'd say 10 years ago, we started, my husband and I started to celebrate it with two other sort of anti-holiday people. And the four of us, she was an amazing, well, the both of them were amazing cooks. And we would get together and really concentrate just on being together and having really terrific food and dispensing with presents. You know, we have too much stuff. We're older and we're trying to declutter. Nobody wanted any more presents. And it was really lovely. And then both of them unfortunately died. And so my husband and I were faced with what were we going to do for the holidays? And I said nothing. I think we should just pretend it's just another day. And he didn't like that idea. He thought that was too sad. So he decided, he started this 2 years ago. He decided he was going to, we were going to cook these meals kind of in honor of Karen and Tom. And that's what we've done. And so they've been duo meals.
You don't love cooking.
I don't like to cook at all. So I don't do any of the cooking. I just bring the wine.
See, I know that.
He tasks me for one dish. And to this year, I was tasked to do something green. So I looked up and decided to do asparagus. And I found this organic asparagus at Rollin' Oats, which is delicious looking. And then I went to the recipe called for white miso. I had no idea what that was. But I looked it up and found out that the new Sprouts that's coming on 34th Street, I don't know if you know about this, they've opened this new Sprouts. And even though I don't like to cook, I like to eat. So certain grocery stores just make me happy. And I walked under the Sprouts and I was like, happy. It's beautiful. And they did have white miso. And so I made this dish. It's asparagus with white miso and fresh Parmesan, which I also got at the Sprouts store. And I think it was pretty good. But he did this spectacular meal. He did, he's from the South, born in Alabama. He's an African-American, so he really loves collard greens. So he made collard greens with smoked turkey, and he had sweet potatoes as a side. It was crazy what he did. And then I brought the wine, and I got the wine from Book and Bottle. And here's my little Christmas story, is that Book and Bottle had holiday story. They had a tasting for Christmas, and they were going to do four wines that were really great for Christmas. I mean, not Christmas, Thanksgiving. Well, Christmas too, I guess. And so I went over there for the tasting, and one of the wines, I'm not a big red wine fan anymore. I find it's a little too much antihistamines. So this white wine, first of all, it was, I know I'm not supposed to talk about prices on this radio, so I won't, but it was the cheapest, let's put it that way. But the really wonderful part of this wine was that it was from a winery owned by a woman named Mary Taylor. And the person who was giving us the wine tasting told us that Mary Taylor goes over to France and goes to these little wineries and convinces people to, you know, to give her a franchise of bringing these little small batches of wine. This wine was so delicious because it didn't compete with my husband Carl's fantastic meal, and spicy because he likes a lot of spices too. It was a really just a terrific one. So I contributed that in my asparagus.
I think that is lovely. You know, and speaking of Book and Bottle, I think this is a perfect segue to our first annual, just in time for our second annual holiday happy hour tonight, our first annual Margot Hammond holiday book recommendations.
Oh, okay.
Well, first of all, I want to ask you, like, growing up, did you read holiday stories? I mean, did you read A Night Before Christmas out loud? Or
I think we probably did, but you know, we read so much that it doesn't stand out that it was necessarily we were reading Christmas, although I do want to recommend some Christmas things for this year.
Let's hear that.
But let me just, I want to say a little bit more about Book and Bottle, because I think that what they're doing is really fabulous. They're having a night. Every night, they're having something new.
And 12 nights of...
Yeah, 12 nights of Christmas. And they had... I thought this was so clever, I didn't get to it, but they had a cider Monday.
And you love ciders. We know that.
And they said, I'm a big cider fan, but I'm sorry I didn't get there. But they said, no, this is not a typo. Cyber, cider. Get it? Cyber Monday, they had cider.
Andy's clever. And, of course, Dom from Book and Bottle is on here frequently. Well, so they are more podcasters.
Could, so I'm you know, of course, I just did the story about the book lounge. So I'm, like, really excited that we have all these places, Tombolo Books. And every time I go past you know, I'm trying to think of Haslam's. I mean, I always shed a little tear. I think they still have the books inside there.
They do. And the cat, I hope the cat's not still inside there, for God's sake.
I'm not too, but I think Kerouac's ghost is still there. Yeah, he's supposed to.
So for those of you who don't know, Margot Hammond was the book editor for many, many, many years and started the book festival many, many years for the Tampa Bay Times.
Which sadly is no longer.
Well, but she is now our author and arts correspondent on Radio St. Pete. When she's not writing a play or talking about jewelry as memory and legacy. And before we get to your recommendations, I want to talk a little bit about this. This is such a wonderful. My mother started this because of you. She would do, and her assisted living, take a piece of jewelry and have everyone bring a piece, and they go around the room.
Oh, how
and
lovely.
They would each share a memory because of your blog and your story. So talk to our audience about doing this during the holidays.
You know, that's really wonderful. Now, I started this with J.N. Terry, who's a writer. And both of us are working on projects, and so we sort of put aside this this project. But you're reminding us both that we need to probably go back to it. We called it Bijou Bayous, biographies of jewelry, bijou as in the French jewelry. And what we did was she did the interviews. She interviewed people, and I edited the interviews, and it was really fun. We did it for a couple of years, and with the hopes of putting it together as a book, which we still have that hope, but we both got on different trajectories. As you mentioned, I started writing plays, and she started writing her novel that she's been working on. It's a fantastic novel, and we're both determined to finish our projects as we age. But Bijou Bayous was really a fun idea, and like you said, that's what the simple idea was, is that our tagline was, every jewelry has a story. And it does. I mean, what if you try this out on people, you know, you say, well, what's the story of those in your earrings? And sure enough, there's a story behind it. And it sometimes is a simple story. Sometimes it's a very complex story. Sometimes it's a scary story. I mean, we had them all. And I think it's worth a compilation, but that's our next project.
I think we could actually do this on radio, and I think we could do just a series. But I want to know that I'm wearing today St. Teresa, my mother-in-law's earrings that she got from Avon years ago, probably 50 years ago, and I have all my mother's. So there is a story. And Margot is wearing not disco balls, holiday balls. Where did you is there
you know,
a story?
There really isn't a story over these. I, you know, just as I said that, I thought, I have no idea where I got these earrings. So this time, but I do have. I'm wearing a ring, which is how would you describe that ring?
Art Deco.
Yeah, kind of an Art Deco,
and it's
sort of an Indian ring, and that I do remember. I got that many, many years ago when I was out west, and so that's a
perhaps
a ring
when you
that
were visiting me in San Diego.
It's possible.
So if
we've
you have,
known each other a long
we've
time,
we've known each other over. We're not going to tell you. It may be 50 years, but you know. So if you have nothing to say to someone at the Christmas table, bring a piece of jewelry and a story with you, or bring a piece of jewelry and tell a story. So without further ado, Margot, please debut your first annual holiday book recommendations.
Well, I figured that's what you'd ask me today. So first of all, I brought a book bag, and of course it's radio, so you can't see it, but it says Whatcha Reading, Whatchu, and then reading. Spelt the right way, and it's from the Woodson African American Museum of Florida. They were selling these at the St. Pete Reads Literary Festival, the very first one, and of course they've had one every year since. And if you ever get a chance to go to them, they're just fabulous. They do a really terrific job, and so I have it. So it's one of my favorite book bags. So I thought, oh, I should just at least bring the book bag, but the two that I wanted to recommend. Here's my deal: is that I think the holidays, like I said, you know, they're for children. I think it's like there was a radio personality that maybe you guys know. Every year we would listen to him. He was a sports guy. He would do a rant on Halloween, And we loved this rant because this rant would basically say, you know, you're an adult. Don't wear a costume. It's for children, you know. And it was very funny. And so, but I'm sort of feeling that way about Christmas and Thanksgiving is that it should be for children. I really think that we need to concentrate on our children. They seem to be abandoned. You know, adults are going off and doing their thing, and they forget that that's the magical time for kids. I don't have kids, so
Santa Claus really does exist, folks. Santa Claus doesn't
doesn't go and bring presents to adults. He comes for children. So that's my pitch. So it's a very frazzled time for adults. And so to me, I think reading is a terrific way to give yourself a little time to yourself. But, you know, War and Peace? No. I mean, you know, you're not going to turn and go into something that's like 600 pages. So I'm going to make two recommendations to start with, and we can talk about other books, but these are the two Christmas ones that I want to talk about. The first one is actually a short story that was given away free by Lisa Unger, and it's called The Killer Claus. Now, you get that idea, Claus, Santa Claus.
Clever.
Very clever title. And I'm not going to give away the story, but it's a short story. And I highly recommend reading short stories over the holidays. Well, actually, any time, but especially when you're frazzled. So The Killer Claus is about a hired killer named Paige, P-A-I-G-E. And she goes to do her hired killing. And now, of course, Lisa Unger's. No, these are. The two things I'm going to recommend are murder mysteries. I'm sorry.
Because time like killing if you want to kill your family at the holidays because they've said something. Good one, Margo.
This is just I just happen to like murder mysteries.
You're a quirky
book. And also during Christmas, who wants to read anything kind of heavy? So, you know, this is the time to be, murders All the murders in the building. So, and then you can ask me about my next play because then I'll segue into that. But so because it's a murder play. So so these two things I would like to recommend. And one is this local author, our local author, Lisa Unger, who we are going to be interviewing on Radio St. Pete on the 11th. So I hope people tune in for that. For her, we're going to be talking about her in-between time. You know, writers talk about the flow. We have to have the flow. Well, she once gave a talk at a program, and she talked about the ebb, because it's not just the flow. We have to be worried about the ebb too. So that's what we're going to be talking about, the ebb, what happens between times when you're not writing. But anyway, I digress. So she wrote this little short story called A Killer Claus, and she gave it away. Not, I'm not supposed to say free, but without charge or whatever.
Just complimentary.
Complimentary as a promotion, I guess. But that's how I got it because it was through Amazon. So, but you can get it now. I think I'm sure it doesn't cost very much now. Maybe it's still free. But it's a terrific short story. It's Paige who goes to do this killing and finds a little girl in the house and decides she can't do the killing. So that's the setup. And it's a short story. The other thing I would like to recommend is a book of short stories by P.D. James, a fantastic, wonderful English mystery writer. And P.D. James wrote a little short story collection called The Mistletoe Murder and Other Stories. And so I think that's like perfect for Christmas, The Mistletoe Murder.
All right. I love that. And then also, Margo, the importance of a book club. Let's talk about, you know, I think that's a great gift is to start a book club and opt in to being part of one. You're part of a book club.
Unfortunately, I'm part of too many book clubs now. I'm part of my sister's book club. And what is that one on the
All the Murders in the Building.
All the Murders in the Building. So, and then you can ask me about my next play because then I'll segue into that. But so, because it's a murder play. So, so these two things I would like to recommend. One is this local author, our local author, Lisa Unger, who we are going to be interviewing on Radio St. Pete on the 11th. So I hope people tune in for that. For her, we're going to be talking about her in-between time. You know, writers talk about the flow. We have to have the flow. Well, she once gave a talk at a program, and she talked about the ebb. Because it's not just the flow. We have to be worried about the ebb, too. So that's what we're going to be talking about, the ebb. What happens between times when you're not writing? But anyway, I digress. So she wrote this little short story called A Killer Clause, and she gave it away. No, I'm not supposed to say free, but without charge or whatever.
Just complimentary.
Complimentary as a promotion, I guess. But that's how I got it, because it was through Amazon. So, but you can get it now. I think I'm sure it doesn't cost very much now. Maybe it's still free. But it's a terrific short story. It's Paige who goes to do this killing and finds a little girl in the house and decides she can't do the killing. So that's the setup. And it's a short story. The other thing I would like to recommend is a book of short stories by P.D. James, a fantastic, wonderful English mystery writer. And P.D. James wrote a little short story collection called The Mistletoe Murder and Other Stories. And so I think that's like perfect for Christmas, The Mistletoe Murder.
All right. I love that. And then also, Margo, the importance of a book club. Let's talk about, you know, I think that's a great gift, is to start a book club and opt in to being part of one. You're part of a book club.
Unfortunately, I'm part of too many book clubs now. I'm part of my sister's book club. And that came about because over the pandemic, she asked me to, you know, to join the book club. And of course, in the pandemic, we were all on Zoom. And I thought, oh, well, this will be easy because I'll be on Zoom. I don't have to schlep over to someone's house and I don't have to cook. Because I was the very first book club I was ever in was when I became book editor, believe it or not. I was not a big person for book clubs. And this book club was very regimented. There were 12 people in it. And if one dropped out, then somebody could come in. Everybody had a month that was their month. You had to decide what book you had authority over the book. Of course, I like that part, picking the book. But then you had to cook. And she would not let you. She would not let you cater, you know. And she, you had to cook the food. Well, this was so oppressive to me. I dropped out. I
mean, all right, folks, no cooking on any book club you invite Margo to.
I couldn't bear it. So okay, so I didn't do book clubs for a while. But then my sister said, "Oh, it's the pandemic. You know, could you join this book club?" And I joined this book club, and it was really fun. And it was usually they were meeting in Milwaukee. And so, okay, the pandemic ended and they all said on one of the Zooms, they said, "Oh, well, so now we can get together." And Diane, my sister, said, "Yeah, but then Margo can't come." Well, really, she did. She wanted to keep it on Zoom because she didn't want to cook, or she didn't want to, you know,
run to
have
the
you know, yeah, run to the, she's a very good cook, but she didn't want to have all the hoopla of going to people's houses. So We've been doing that. Now, that book club, I will never quit. I love it.
Since 2020?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow.
And then, but then I got roped into this other book club that's it's done at a New York, again, also on Zoom. It's done with the New York Public Library.
Oh, wow.
And the person who asked me to join it, I met through London Writers Salon, which is another online thing for writers. And I just love this book club. So, but they read really hard, difficult books. Like, we're supposed to read, the next book we're supposed to read is Fraud by Zadie Smith. This is not an easy book to read.
I just read about that in New Yorker. She had a piece.
Yeah. And I mean, she's a wonderful writer, but it's a big, heavy book for Christmas.
Well, we have been talking with Margo Hammond. She is our author and arts correspondent for Radio St. Pete. And before we leave, we want to hear about quickly the new murder mysteries play that you're writing.
Well, I decided that I took a class with Helen Murray at the American Stage, and she made an offhand comment. You know, it's interesting that there's no mystery plays, or very few mystery plays that have been written, and people like mysteries so much. And I thought, oh, that's my next play.
Great.
So I'm trying to write a play. I'm going to write a play. I'm in the process of writing a play set at Sunken Gardens.
Ooh, folks, stay tuned on Radio St. Pete. So, Margo, before we leave, just the importance of Radio St. Pete to the arts community and the author and book community, and a shout out for us, please.
Well, I think that one of the wonderful thing about radio, I mean, you were talking about our childhoods, and, you know, I'm old enough so that I remember before TV and when we used to sit around and listen to the radio. And it's, radio is so much more of a pulling together of people than any other media that I can imagine. You know, I think you do showcase a lot of different kinds of people, but it's also a very democratic way of expressing yourself. You don't have to dress up for radio. You're listening to people, their embodied voices. You're not judging their how they look, what they're wearing, what they look like. You're just hearing their ideas. So I think radio has always been a wonderful way to pull community together, and certainly Radio St. Pete has done that with a bang.
Well, thank you so much, Margaret, for joining us. And back to you, Joe, to fill us in on what we can do to help Radio St. Pete.
Well, indeed. Thanks to Margo, former book editor of the Tampa Bay Times. And thanks for the Times Festival of Reading. I wanted to double down on that. It was a great memory. Thanks for the opportunity to meet and talk with David McCullough some years ago. And great to always have you with us here on the